Let's see. Memorial Cup champion, prospect of the New York Rangers, and now a guest on the OHL podcast. How lucky are we to have Doug Keeler with us today? Mr. Keeler, it's a pleasure. Thanks for making time to do this.
Well, it's a pleasure for me, and there's nothing better than to talk about the history. And I have a lot of ties in directly even to Kitchener, although I didn't play here. But the history going back to the green shirts and the other teams that, you know, were way back when is just amazing. And then, of course, the teams moving from Guelph to Kitchener and you know, right now Brantford getting the Hamilton team. It's interesting to keep track of it all.
I still don't think the city of Guelph has forgiven the city of Kitchener for taking away their junior A team.
No. And I found some of that out recently, but every time I'm at the Odd, I go into their, their sports hall of fame there with the store. And I look at, you know, times, dates, and I can relate to everything from the early 60s. I hate to give away my age, but, and the last time I was in, I got a nice picture of the guy that used to sign my paychecks, Emil Francis. And it shows him writing a check out to somebody from Kitchener to have the New York Rangers come here for training camp. So he was a pretty special guy. Like he would 150 guys at training camp. He knew every player. Didn't matter if you're in the NHL team, the American League team, East Coast. He knew where you were from and everything about you, which really impressed me.
I remember those days when the ties between the Kitchener Rangers and the New York Rangers were so tight. So were you able to be a part of any of those training camps?
Yeah, I came. Well, so I, as a 15-year-old, I was with a team called Toronto Red Wings Butterbeats, and we won the first ever All-Canadian Midget Tournament with 16 teams in Kingston, Ontario in 1967. I don't think we got enough recognition because to win a Canadian championship, our whole team was a minor midget team, except three players. Two of them you might have heard of. Gary Coulter went to Kansas City, Richie Rangers, and Bob Kelly, of course, the Hound, played for Philadelphia Flyers. Bob and I are good friends. And we were allowed three players from our midget team, the same with the Toronto Marlies. And we beat London, and we beat St. Catharines, and we beat the Marlies. And some of the players, I got the old programs here and everything, that played were like Dan Maloney that was in London and in the NHL, guys across, you know, the whole country. And it was amazing that we won that tournament with basically a minor midget team.
That's incredible. And what was that team again? The Toronto?
Toronto Red Wings. And then Ontario Milk Producers was our sponsor. They called Butterbeeps. At that time, you'd say, what's the difference between beep, beep and margarine? You couldn't say butter. At that time, commercials, which would have been 1966, 67. So the next year, instead of me staying in Toronto playing midget or junior B, I got a tryout with Niagara Falls, who had already played there the year before with Derek Sanderson. So I went down and I wasn't supposed to play, and I made the team. And next thing you know, I still got my, it looks like a school ring, but I still have my Memorial Cup ring. So that was pretty amazing.
Well, it sure as heck is, because you go from the championship in midget with Kingston, or in Kingston with that Toronto team, and then you win a Memorial Cup your first year in what was then still known as the OHA.
It was the OHA, and we didn't play overtime. So in my mind, I still have a couple of programs here that from the Kitchener Rangers. And so this here is guys I play with and against and good friends: Walter Tkachuk, Danny Sagan, Eddie Hatoum, Jerry Gray, and Gold Hamilton, like all these guys. And the funny thing is, recently we bought a couple of cars from Crosby Motors last 2 years. And I played against Cam and I played against Gary, and I didn't have the connection. And of course, there's Gord Crosby he was on the board of directors. And so there's quite a connection going back that I didn't even realize was there until I moved here a couple of years ago. And with this program here, if you'd like, I could read you some of the names in here.
Well, you already hit some of the names that are the stuff of legend in Kitchener with Tkachuk and Sagan, and then Mike Crosby, still heavily involved with Crosby Volkswagen, just doing tremendous work. But yeah, for sure. What other names pop out of there?
Well, this team that Kitchener had, they finished first overall, and 1 point behind them was the Junior Canadians. And then the Marlies were third, And Hap Ems, who came from Niagara Falls, he always got Niagara Falls Flyers into the fourth position because four played eight. They didn't do it like they would, like you should do it, like the NHL. So we drew Peterborough and won in five games. Then we drew Montreal Juniors, and they had Perreault, Hull, and Tardif, Lapointe, Bouchard. They had a fantastic team. And we knocked them off in six. Then we played Kitchener. And I remember two of the guys that drafted me later in my career, Steve Berklasich and Louis Pasador. And I told him, I said, we're going to beat Kitchener. He says, you're just a 16-year-old. What do you know? I said, well, we got Phil Mirror in goal, and you guys can't match our goaltender. So we end up beating them in an eight-game series. And they had, you can talk to people from back then, they had the parade planned in Kitchener. That's how good a hockey team they had. So they had Dave Hainsworth in goal. They had John Barber, Billy's older brother, on defense. Now, John, to me, was a better hockey player than Billy, and he ended up buried in the minors as a defenseman. Then you have Mike Robitaille, and you had Al Carver that played here for 4 or 5 years, I think. Ab DeMarco, of course, played for the Rangers. Jim Frelicky played for Detroit. Lee Inglis, I think he played in Buffalo. Jack Egers, of course, was a personal friend who became a firefighter. And Don Luce, Dennis DuPerry, Danny Sagan, Jim McRae, Jarmo Laitonen, Henry Leivonen, and Cam Crosby. And Brett Medill was the GM, and Wally Coleman was a coach. And I stepped on the ice here in November of that year playing this team. And I looked up at the size of these guys, and I was 148 pounds. And I said, I better be pretty quick in the corners. And I wasn't afraid to mix it up, but I couldn't tangle with guys 225 pounds. You know, I would, but it wouldn't come out too good. So this team was unbelievable. And I know there's been a lot of good teams from Kitchener, and I've followed them like right from then on to now. And I still think, in my mind, this is the best team that I've ever seen out of Kitchener because of the amount of guys. And you got to remember back then you played till you're 20. You couldn't go to the NHL as an 18-year-old. So that team is still pretty special. And the fact that I was on a team that beat them makes it even more special, really.
How did you end up, Doug, playing for the Niagara Falls Flyers? Weren't you originally drafted or at least scouted by Peterborough?
So I was too young. And of course, my brother had played for Roger Neilson, and my dad and Roger didn't kind of see eye to eye. And that's Steve there that played with the Red Wings in Hamilton. And this is my brother, Mike, from Niagara Falls, who played with Sanderson. And that's my picture as a 16-year-old. So, like I say, I was only just turned 16 and invited to camp. Now, if I had stayed in Toronto and played for the Marley Midgets, I would have belonged to the Toronto Marlies. When you don't do that in your own city, same in Ottawa, you can be drafted by anybody. So after my first year at Junior A, I was getting ready. I knew that I was going to be drafted. And we felt at the time that I should be able to stay in Niagara Falls with compensation to whoever drafts me. Well, Dad went to the Marlies, and he went to Oshawa, and then he went to Peterborough. And the first two teams agreed to not draft me, and Roger Neilson drafted me the third pick in the first round. So, and I was playing baseball for Roger at the time, so you can imagine the trouble that that caused. So, you know, being the third pick in all of Ontario as a 16-year-old was pretty special. But anyway, Dad didn't want me playing for Roger. Hap Ems, who was our GM, and his son Paul was our coach, he was like Eddie Shore. He wouldn't part with a nickel. And Peterborough was asking for too much. They wanted Ross Webley. They wanted Donnie Tannehill. They wanted, some pretty good hockey players. And Hap just said to Roger, forget it. So anyway, Roger ended up drafting me. And then Bill Long, who had coached the Barrie Flyers, Niagara Falls the year before, coached me with the Ottawa 67. So he made a deal to get me to Ottawa. And it was probably the best thing to happen at the time. Playing 3 years with Dennis Potvin doesn't hurt. In my mind, after Bobby Orr, he was the best all-around defenseman I ever played with or against. You can argue Larry Robinson's a personal friend. You got Salming, you got Nicholas Lidstrom, Coffey. There's so many good ones, and you had some great ones come out of Kitchener too, that I just kind of thought Dennis was the best all around after Orr.
You're going to have a hard time getting an argument from me. I mean, you list some other greats, and sure, it would be a terrific discussion sometime over a couple of pints, or maybe even it would take pitchers of beer. But Dennis Potvin is absolutely up there. And I remember when I, years ago, Dennis was doing some TV in Ottawa, and I would cross paths with him at 67's games way back.
Yeah, no, Dennis, we were pretty tight. And like I say, you got to remember, he played parts of 6 years of Junior A. And his brother, Jean, I just went down last year, actually in April, we had a celebration of life because Jean passed away 2 years ago, March the 15th in Long Island. So I went down, there was 100 people. Brian Kilray was there that had coached just after I'd left. My line mates were there, Pierre Jerry and Murray Wilson. And Paul Tosh, Dennis, of course. And we had a great reunion. And I get down there periodically and, you know, between Peterborough and Ottawa, there's a lot of history. And I did catch part of your show. Our friend Greg Peters was over the other day, and he put one of your shows on with Peterborough. And some of the discussions were stuff that I remember. And my older brother went to training camp when Scotty Bowman coached. And then you mentioned all the other great coaches that were there. And it wouldn't have hurt if I played in Peterborough, but it didn't work out that way, you know.
Yeah, it's a city and a franchise steeped in history, of course, with Bowman, Roger Nielsen, who you've already mentioned. Gary Green was there, Dick Todd. We could go into a bunch of players that were up there, too. But for those watching on our YouTube channel right now, not only have they seen some of those programs and faces that you showed us, but behind you, framed, is your Ottawa 67s sweater with the C.
Yeah.
I don't care what league you're in, Doug. When they put that C on your sweater, that means something.
The reason it meant so much was that the players voted on it. And so when I tell people a guy 2 years younger than me by the name of Dennis Potvin was not chosen as team captain, it made me feel good. I mean, this guy was the best player in our team. And the first year I was there, Billy Clement was our captain, number one center. And then Pete LaFrambois was number two, and I was the third center. And, you know, we had some pretty good hockey players. And then after Pierre and Peter went to the NHL with Pittsburgh and the Rangers, then we end up with Blake Dunlop and Wayne Merrick. They were pretty good centers as well. So we had a pretty good go there. Their first year, it's funny, my first game of Junior A, I had 2 goals and 2 assists with Niagara against Ottawa 67s. And I've got all that information, multiple goals, I've got so much stuff here, I really don't know what to do with it all. But it's good memories. And then, of course, my brother was captain in Niagara Falls his last year, and we played against each other, and my parents would be pulling their hair out because, you know, he was a defenseman, I was a centerman, and we would be banging in the corner. One time he dropped his gloves, and I wouldn't drop my gloves against him because he was as tough as they came, and you could ask anybody back then. He didn't back down from anybody. Well, my dad was a pro boxer, so that kind of helped.
How tough was it, Doug, to be traded? I mean, you just win a Memorial Cup, your first year in the OHA, and then off to Ottawa you go.
Well, the toughest thing was school. So I'd started in West Hill. I grew up in East End, you know, Highland Creek, East End, Scarborough. And then I get settled in Niagara Falls. And I felt bad for my parents because why should they travel all over the place? They got 2 boys playing, and you're amateurs. And I have to tell you, Monday I'd knock on the door, and Hap M's would have the fedora and the glasses and the pipe, you know, and after 5 minutes of my knuckles would be raw, I'm coming for my paycheck. What do you want? I said, Hap, I come to get my paycheck. Well, you should be paying me to play here. Well, $7 is what I got for the week. And then they give my landlady $25 to room and board me. And he thought that I should be paying, but that was Hap. And that's how he won championships, because he was very strict.
When you got drafted to the National Hockey League, the 71 draft, I mean, listen, it wasn't that deep, right? Just LaFleur and Dion going first and second that year. But you're a fifth rounder to the New York Rangers. That's not too shabby.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed because Bill was a pretty good coach. And he had promised me that when LaFrambois went and Clement, I'd be his number one center. And my last year, I almost ended up getting traded to Oshawa because he had me third line center. He wouldn't let me kill penalties. Wouldn't let me play the power play. And he had promised me a good draft year. And I end up with, you know, 20 goals and 40 assists with not a lot of ice time. And I was pretty upset about that. And it kind of hurt me in the draft because there was one guy that went one ahead of me, a personal friend, a great hockey player, Peter Sullivan, that played for the Generals. And Peter ended up making his mark. He got drafted to Montreal, and I was the next pick. And there would have been five centers ahead of me with the Canadians, and there was eight or nine with the Rangers. And the Rangers had just made a trade to get Bobby Russo and a few other guys. Pete Stemkowski came at the time. You had Tkachuk, you had John Rattel. They picked up Gene Carr from St. Louis. And it was just, you know, for me to be the 10th or 11th ranked, there's no way I could crack that lineup. And so Peter ended up going to Montreal, and I went the next pick to the Rangers. And it was a little disappointing that way, although, you know, I did pretty good considering I didn't get the ice time that I should have as my last year, really. That's the only, you know.
You mentioned Montreal, Doug, and that just makes me think back to the Memorial Cup that you played in with Niagara Falls. Some of the games there. So you're playing in your arena in Niagara Falls and some of the other games at the Montreal Forum. That must have been a thrill.
Well, the Forum was the best rink and the best ice. It was 210 feet long and the Gardens was 195. So you had that extra room around the net, but the Forum was great. And before that, playing against Verdun Maple Leafs, and Moose DuPont was on that team that played for Philadelphia. He ended up with the Rangers and he played in Omaha. So a lot of guys that went to Omaha the year I was drafted by the Rangers had played, most of them came from the Junior A, OHA. And that league was like an all-star Junior A league. It was amazing, the Central League. And then the American League, I ended up in Providence, was pretty much, you know, more older guys. Guys that had come down, like Kent Douglas, that was Rookie of the Year with the Leafs. He came down, and Johnny Bauer had just gone up from the American League before that. And so both leagues were really good. But playing, you know, Pierre Gerry ended up in Omaha. Jack Eagers was in Omaha. I think DeMarco might have been there. There was a lot of guys that went through here from Kitchener that originally, and I think Walt Tkachuk played there a few games. But anyway, it was amazing. When I went to Omaha, it was really good hockey.
The old Central League, International League, American League. Yeah. When did you know, or when did you decide to hang them up?
Well, just the injuries took their toll. And, you know, when I was a little upset because I was on the first line of my first game in the American League. And of course, who's coaching the guy that I knew fairly well, Don Cherry, his first game coaching with Rochester. I'm on the ice. I had two goals and two assists that first game. I guess I was a one-game wonder. And he sent Ron Fogel, that used to play here in London, he sent him over the boards to fight me so I wouldn't get the hat trick. And, of course, I got in a fight that game, too. So played that game. I played a game in Cincinnati, and then we're in Cleveland. And a guy that played here that I played against, I think he was American-born, Chris Ahrens, that played in the minor leagues, and he was with the Kitchener Rangers. Well, he was with Cleveland Barons, and I was with Providence Reds. And in the third period, I come out, and my right winger, Jerry Butler, that played in the NHL, he was with Hamilton Red Wings. I give him a beautiful pass, and I'm admiring it, and Chris hit me late. And I end up with a charity horse that's out for a month. And that night in the hotel room, my coach, Larry Papine, that had played for the New York, I just said, I really hate to give you the news, but he said, it's too bad you got hurt. He said, you were to go up to New York to play against Detroit tomorrow night. And, of course, my whole childhood, Gordie Howe was my favorite player, and I'd met him as a 12-year-old. I wanted to play for the Red Wings. And so that was the closest I got to going up with the Rangers. And because I played two exhibition games with them here in Kitchener in London. And it took me a month to get back with a severe Charlie horse. And then they put me on the third, fourth line. Then they loaned me to Fort Worth Wings, which was Detroit's farm team. And I ended up with a really good playoff against Omaha. And my points that year, I'd become more of a penalty killer and a playoff or a penalty killer faceoff specialist. And I thought my game had improved defensively. And so I'd already, that was my second year. And I expected, you know, to get a little more money. And when I came to training camp, the third year unsigned was a mistake because Rangers just kind of, they just let me go. They got Rick Middleton that year, some other guys. I kind of cut my own throat by not signing the contract, but I thought, and I was one of the only guys who didn't have an agent. And I put out the points and everything. I said, you know, I think I should get a little more. And no, that's all you're getting, and sign it or not. And so that was a mistake on my part, I think.
When you were that close, the injury away from getting called up to play that game against the Wings, is that, I mean, how do you look back on that today, Doug?
Well, I think about it all the time when I'm having discussions, but I think the thing that's makes it easier for me is there was guys way better than me that didn't make the NHL, and there was guys that weren't as good as me that did make it. So you kind of have to, you know, things kind of even out, and you have to be in the right place at the right time. Things just have to go. Like as a young kid, when I was growing up, I was like a Gretzky. When anybody in Toronto, I had a guy tell me this years later that he said, you know, he said, when you were 12, that you were ranked in the top six in Canada. I said, no, I didn't know that. He said, did you know that when you were playing in the Toronto Hockey League that everybody knew who Keeler was? And I said, no, I didn't really know that. So people tell you things later on, you know, and so, yeah, it bothers me at times, but it's just the way it was. And then I ended up eventually after that, Kalamazoo in the International League with Bob Lemieux that had coached me in Fort Worth, and season-ending injuries there, you know, separated shoulder, broken foot. I was in Binghamton in the North American League, which was the old East Coast League. Same thing, broken bones here and there. And I wanted to still play. So I ended up coming home and playing senior hockey for a while with a lot of guys that had gone through the same thing. And so eventually I got on the Scarborough Fire Department, later Toronto, and had a 32-and-a-half-year career doing that. So that wasn't bad. But, yeah, like you say, you know, if I could have got up that one game with Rangers, I might have stayed because one of my line mates the next year was Rookie of the Year, Steve Vickers, with the New York Rangers. And Steve had played, of course, with Rattel and Joe Bear and those guys. And just a great guy. We're still in touch. And he had played for the Marlies. And, you know, see guys like him and Larry Robinson that was a friend of mine. And it kind of hurt at times, but because I was supposed to be the one of the four boys that played in the NHL. And I felt bad for my parents more than myself, really. But I just thought, if I'm not going to get back to the show, why am I wasting my time? And I could have probably coached and played and coached and stayed down. Problem was, if you didn't belong to an NHL team, it was hard to find somewhere that you could stay. And like Hershey Bears used to keep guys for 15 years, like Mike Nikolak. And if I could have stayed 15, 20 years in one place, I would have stayed. But moving eight times in 3 years became a little bit draining.
Was there any other choice for you but to play hockey when you talk about, you know, your parents and your brothers playing? I mean, this must have been in the Keeler family blood.
Well, my dad built an outdoor rink. And I mean, you know, we started playing 6, 7 years old. And that was before like now where you can't, you know, I was out in the rink behind the fire hall last 2 days. And now, of course, it was only open 3 days. And that's how we learned how to play, playing shinny. And we just, you know, my mom and dad put so much time and money, which they didn't have, into us kids. And my youngest brother ended up, he was with the Marlies for a while. And then he was captain of NCAA St. Louis Billikens. And of course, Steve and Mike and I, you know, playing junior A. But Bob actually played in the line with Mark and Marty Howe with the Marlies for a couple of games, which is kind of interesting. So he was a good hockey player. But no, when I was in school, the teachers would say, well, you know, what do you want to be? I said, I'm going to be a hockey player. Well, what else do you want to be? I said, I don't want to be anything else. So I kind of frustrated them. Well, when I started playing junior and then my last year, they did an interview and I said, you know, I wouldn't mind being a phys ed teacher if hockey doesn't work out. So I started to get a little bit, you know, more mature and have backups. And the fire department was good, except I've had a few health issues, which are under control. And but, you know, the hockey was what I wanted to do. And it was disappointing. Like, you know, the game doesn't stop when you quit playing, and it's really hard, you know, to get at first to get over it. But once you're around people that went through the same thing, I have a good friend that you might know the name. He played for the Los Angeles Kings in 67, but he was the captain of the 62 Memorial Cup Hamilton Red Wings, Howie Menard. And Howie was a great hockey player, and we're in touch all the time. And we had a group in Pickering before I moved here of NHL, AHL, old-timers. And my right winger was a famous hockey player with the Leafs, the Blackhawks, and the Rangers. And he was 86 years old playing on my right wing. And he still would be playing, but they tore the rink down, and we didn't have the ice. Peter Conacher. And I'm in touch with Peter once or twice a month, and just a gentleman. And we had other guys like Brent Grieve and his brother that played with the Oshawa Generals when they won the Memorial Cup, I think in 84. I think that's when Oshawa won, when Lindros was there, I think.
It was a little bit later than 84, but I know the team, and I know the name very well. Yeah,
because he played, and I remember the defenseman now that scored from the blue line in overtime against, it was at Cops Coliseum, the one that we're talking about too.
But that was the anyway, 90 championship, yeah.
So after that, I got, you know, playing this pickup hockey and really enjoyed it. We had some really good skates, and the guys are bringing their kids out that were 16, 19, and it's like the level was picking up, you know. And I ended up coaching as an assistant with the Whitby Dunlops in 2004-05 when the NHL had the lockout. And our head coach, Bill Purcell, had coached the American League, Kalamazoo. He'd coached York University, U of T, and won championships. And I learned more off him in a year of coaching than you could learn in 10 years off anybody. And he was just, he's just a great coach and a mentor. And then after that, 2 years later, I coached the midget team, which turned out disastrous with John Crawford. You know Mark Crawford that coached?
Sure.
His cousin. Now, I know Mark as well. And John and I coached the midget team out of Whitby, and the parents came in and didn't like the fact that, you know, way we ran things. And we were the only, I think, coaches in Ontario that didn't have kids on the team. And this team had been together since they were like peewees, and they didn't like the fact that we ran a tight ship. And so they got rid of us. But that was my last coaching experience. But so I'm back just playing pickup as a pool player with the KW Oldtimers now. So it's okay. It's tough. It's really tough when, you know, I hadn't played in 4 years because of the pandemic, but I'm not ready to hang it up yet. I still got my equipment and skates, and I still enjoy it. So I'll be stubborn until maybe a couple more years anyway.
You know, I'm just thinking about the coaching style that, you know, not all parents loved. I'm thinking about Don Cherry sending the guy out, you know, sending Fogle out there to make sure you don't get a hat trick in the game against his team. When you think back on the way the game was played when you were in it, late 60s through the mid 70s, compared to today, I mean, what do you think back on? It was the wild, wild west out there.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I personally believe the only reason I made Niagara Falls, they were ready to send me home. I got in a fight in the parking lot with a guy that was 2 years older and about, you know, 8 inches taller than me. And the guy had sucker punched me and put the boots to me, and I got up, and he came in. I cut him for 20 stitches over his eye with a left hook, and they broke the fight up. And the next day we're at training camp, and this guy's got sunglasses on. He was a big guy. He was from Windsor. And my brother came in. He got wind of this. He was furious, and he got wind, and he came in. He said to the guy, "I'm talking to you." And the guy finally, he said, "Next time you want to fight somebody," he says, "pick on somebody that's bigger than you," because he said, "you can't beat my brother." But I could fight off, you know, off the skates. On skates, I didn't have good balance, but my dad had taught us to street fight because he was a boxer. And so my first game after that, I just got all the wounds healed up from that scrap in the parking lot. And we're playing in Oshawa. And Dunk Wilson was the goalie, and Rick Lee was our captain. And they started a fight. Well, we emptied the benches, and we had 15 players, and they had 20. So we had a brawl in Oshawa. And who do I end up paired off with? A guy my size, 2 years older, but he played for the Boston Bruins, and he was from Kingston, named Freddie O'Donnell. And this guy could throw him. And I remember throwing the first 6 punches and receiving the next 26. But, you know, I didn't need stitches. I had a black eye and a few cuts, and And I think it was the next year, I got into a scrap with all people, Rick McLeish, that played in Philly. And him and his brother Dale, that I'm still in touch with, I had played with Dale in senior hockey. And Rick and I got into it. Once again, I threw the first six punches and he threw the next 36. And I'm like, of all people to end up fighting with. And then, of course, another guy, you might remember the name. We had played together as kids, as 13, 14-year-olds. Then he went to Junior B as a 14-year-old. And then he played for the Marlies. And I fought him my last year with Ottawa because he was a stick man. And then him and I got drafted by Omaha, or sent to Omaha with the Rangers, Steve Drabano.
Oh, yeah. And
405 minutes in penalties. And I was a penalty killer. And I just used to take Steve out for dinner in Omaha and say, you know. But what had happened, he'd speared one of our players, Brian McSheffrey. And the coach came in the room and said, anybody, or it wasn't a coach, it was Howard Darwin. Now, Howard owned Ottawa and he owned London. And Howard said, anybody takes out Durbano, he's got a bad shoulder. He says, I'm going to give you $500. Well, I'd sat on the bench the first 10 minutes of the game and I was furious that Bill had, we'd had penalties and that. So I got on the ice the first shift and the pucks was going towards Durbano and it was at the blue line. And I left my feet off the ice about 3 feet and landed on Steve's shoulder, bad shoulder, and knocked him down to the ice. And he went off. This was the first period. And if he hadn't come back, I would have won $500. He came back with 5 minutes to play. So then the last game in the playoffs, we lost the Marlies and Steve and I had a fight. And then we played Noma and he wanted to know why I took out his shoulder. I said, well, they're going to pay me $5. He said, why didn't you tell me I wouldn't have come back on the ice? But that was quite the thing back then. You know, the first year I played, we didn't wear helmets.
Of course.
And goalies, the first year I played in the Central Pro League, they didn't wear masks. Like, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, but the goalies back then used to fight a lot too. You know, which, but like I say, when there was something going on, we emptied the benches so many times. And it was tough as a 16-year-old. As I got older, it was a little bit easier. But when the OHA came out and they were the OHL and they said, you know, when players are fighting, the players got to go to the bench. That's the best thing they could have done, really. And I don't think you'll ever see fighting out of the game, but I don't like the stage fights. I think that's kind of, you know, that's taken away from skilled players that should be playing instead of some of these guys, you know. But the game, the kids are bigger, stronger, faster, and I'm not so sure that the skill's any better. Like when I look at Marcel Dion, Gilbert Perreault, the guys I play with and against, Pop Van, these guys, I mean, if they had today's equipment, Ivan Krinoye, he probably could skate as fast as McDavid if he had the right equipment. And, you know, back those days, guys like Johnny Bauer and Lauren Worsley and some of these guys, they would smoke and have a beer in between periods. And, you know, and the training back then, I mean, you know, if you got hurt, you were on your own because it wasn't the same as today. And these kids today, I give them credit for the conditioning and the commitment. But if I watch a game now, they get to the red line, they dump the puck in. We used to work so hard, you come and get it off us. We're not giving it to you. So two forwards would work on the one defenseman and chip it off the boards. And that's how we used to stick closer together. The way that they do power plays today, I wish I was still playing and killing penalties because I could make a fortune. These guys wouldn't be wandering out the way they do and passing the puck back. I'd have breakaways. I used to get breakaways as it was when I played pro, but I don't get that part of the game. I don't, maybe you could elaborate on it a bit. You watch it all the time and I don't know what you think of it.
In terms of the penalty kill not being as aggressive.
No, I'm talking, yeah, that, but also about the power play, this dumping the puck back. Like,
oh yeah, the little, listen, that is probably the last 10 years or so. And I've always wondered too, but the idea is for that guy who gets the drop pass to attack with speed.
Oh, absolutely. Like Braden sure. Point. Like I'm a Tampa fan and Braden Point just like blows the doors off these guys. But the other thing, you and I could make $1 million if I could convince somebody to let you and I go on the ice and teach these guys how to take a penalty shot. Because I don't care what the statistics say, and I watch a lot of hockey. But when a guy goes down the boards and comes in on a 45-degree angle and they're talking about getting the goalie move, you've now taken away 75% of your target. We used to go down the middle of the ice. I'm a right-hand shot. my left side of my body would be lined up with the left post. My stick would be in the middle. I could go stick low, glove low, high. I could deke either. I had six options. And how they can do this at the NHL and junior level boggles my mind, because I think I could prove a point if somebody would ever hire me to teach these guys how to take a penalty shot. And I don't care about, you know, the analytics or what happens. I watch games where they go through 9 and 10 shooters. These guys come in, they're so distracted and tired by the time they get to the net. Tavares, the puck went over a stick. It happened to Kucherov. I mean, these are great hockey players. And I'm thinking, why haven't they not done it the way it should be done? I don't get that. It doesn't make sense to me.
You know, one of the big parts of that, I think, and you already mentioned earlier how goalies weren't even wearing masks your first year in pro, right? The equipment on these goaltenders today, Doug, you could go low stick, low blocker, top, whatever, but you could see so little of the net behind these monsters these days.
Oh, you're right. And they want, a lot of them score with through the five hole. They have to get, and I get that aspect. If you're going to do that, though, don't come in so deep to the faceoff circle. I've seen the last couple of games, and I watch all the Tampa games. Goalies are coming out and poke check, and that's what I would do. But it's like, and the other thing too is explain to me, and I don't care if it's Vasilevskiy, who used to be the greatest goalie in the world, why are these guys on their knees when a slap shot's coming from the blue line and it goes under the crossbar? When we played, if you shot it 6 inches off the ice, guys would crucify it. The forwards would go out and fight our own defensemen. We didn't want to stay in front of the net with pucks going under our ears. And I just don't get it. They go down before they shoot. Now, last night, I watched a former Kitchener Ranger who I really like, Jack Eye, score a goal at Montreal. And this kid, you talk about tough. And you look at his upbringing and what he did in Kitchener. And I believe he came from Hamilton, didn't he, originally?
That's right. You got it.
Yeah. And his brother that was playing there. And I've heard a lot about this guy, and then I watched him. And boy, he can take care of himself. But he had a great game last night. He could have had 5 points. He played so well. But he took a slap shot that was 102 miles an hour, and the goalie went down his knees from Buffalo, and it was up under the crossbar. I'm thinking, if the guy stands up, it hits him, right? So there are things that, you know, I'm not going to convince people, but there are things that I think could really could be changed, because the goalies have to go down when a guy's sweeping around the net and whatnot. But and how they allow guys to stand in the crease, you know, you remember the Brett Hull deal with the toe in the crease against Buffalo, and Dallas won that. That's not fair. And in our day, if a guy was in a crease with a toe and the puck went in the net and you didn't interfere with the goalie, they wouldn't count it, which I don't agree with. I think what they could have done was said, if you're in the crease and you're interfering with the goalie, they never had to make the crease bigger or change that rule. But back then, once again, and we only have one referee. Now you got two referees. How do they miss so much? I just don't. In our day, the goalie would, they'd break your ankles if you stood there like they do. You know, it's just so different that way. I mean, like you say, the equipment and then the players all in front, you can't even see the net.
Well, the goalies are basically pussycats nowadays. We don't get a good old goalie fight much these days.
No, and a goalie fight, well, how about the one with, I played it the other day on YouTube with this, I think it was Felix Potvin and Ron Hextall. Felix came pretty good. I think Hextall was surprised. It's okay that the game's speeding up and it's changed a lot, but there just seems to be, the one thing that's different is the guys carry their sticks so they're just out of control. Sometimes they're too fast. The lesser talented players, they're out of control, and this hitting from behind, I don't get it, because the kids that are playing from tykes right up to peewees, they got a stop sign on their sweater. When you get a guy gets rammed into the boards and he's vulnerable, and you get these announcers saying, oh, well, you know, he turned the wrong way, that's crap. The guy should be responsible that's going in to check the guy. And, you know, of course, Don Cherry was part of that. You got to finish your checks. Well, a defenseman in his own end isn't going to score, your net at the other end. And to run a guy through the boards when he's vulnerable, I just, you know, in our day, there seemed to be more respect. I know there was more fighting, but there was more respect that way, that the injuries were different, you know, but I don't know. Today's game, it's just run and gun, and I feel bad for the defensemen because they get crucified. You know, I mean, this guy Wilson from Washington, and he's not a bad hockey player, but he's a nut.
I watched him come up through this league with the Plymouth Whalers.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Well, he's a good hockey player.
That he is. That he is. But yes, you're right. He plays on that edge and oftentimes over that edge too.
Yeah, and when you talk about the two, they call them Kachuks, not Tkachuk, like Walter Tkachuk. You will look at those two, and every time they do something dirty, everybody says, well, they're playing on the edge. And you know what I say to that? I say, it might apply to some players, but these two guys, you're either dirty or you're not dirty. And these two guys are not playing on the edge. They're just outright dirty. And I, you know, and I look at them and they're good, great hockey players, but I see them hitting guys from behind and just doing stupid stuff. And in our day, they'd have to fight every game because people wouldn't put up with them. And these announcers are saying, well, the same thing with the Morgan Riley deal. And I talked to my brother that was real, you know, he's as tough as they came. And he says, who cares if a guy slapped the puck into the net? He says, Morgan Riley got 5-game suspension and he tried to appeal it. So is he going to go to Bettman and say, you know what, the guy hurt my feelings and I kind of lost it? Now, he was a first-time offender, but, you know, when you think back to the Dale Hunter thing with when he took the guy out, Bergeron,
yeah,
with the empty net, and he got 30 games. So as much as, you know, Riley's a first-time offender, and I like him as a hockey player, I just thought, well, he took the stick to the guy's neck. And the other question is, what would he have done to the guy or any of them if the guy had speared the goalie or done something that deserved a retaliation? Like, to me, I get the mindset that, you know, it looked like he was showing him up. But personally, I look at it differently than, you know, and I know you're a Leaf fan, but it doesn't have anything to do with the Leafs. It has to do with what's right and what's wrong. And if you watch NFL football, these guys taunt each other and show people up every play. I'd be fighting every play in football if I played football. Because, you know, there's some things, and Riley's just lucky it wasn't a playoff game, because, you know, I felt bad for the kid. He certainly didn't mean to do what he did, but he did it. And to listen to Nick Kiprios say, well, you know, I would have sucker punched the guy. And Reeves says, like, the guy would still be like, come on, go after a guy. I could see going in, like, you know, maybe body checking the guy or even rubbing your face or gloving his face. You wouldn't have got suspended. Like, in our day, probably that might have happened, but there wouldn't have been a fight over something like that. It would have been a face wash or a bump and said, keep your head up, buddy. We'll see you next game. That's what would happen in our day.
That's the thing. You played in an era where you took a number and you meant it.
Oh, well, if you're mad at the time, you got to fight. But with 5 seconds to go in the game, it was just a brain cramp that the poor kid had. And of course now, which is even worse for him, I hope they don't lose tonight when they play Vegas, because they're going to blame Riley for coming back, which is ridiculous. And I still think the kid might make a better forward, but if he's a number one defenseman for the Leafs, that's where they got to shore up if they want to compete in the playoffs. You know yourself, you watch them play, and, you know, to me, they just don't match up defensively, although they're on a roll right now, you know. And I think if they got themselves, you know, like, I mean, Hedman's been with Tampa and he's on, you know, he's at the end of his career, but the Leafs need a stud like that, and they need two or three others. They need four solid defensemen, and nothing wrong with Riley, but if he's your number one, that explains their problems on defense, right?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. You know, you've mentioned a lot of names, Doug, of guys you played with or mm-hmm. against coming through this game, and that you're still in touch with to this day. It's a pretty tight-knit community, this game of hockey, isn't it?
Well, it is, because I make these stick rocks. I don't know if Greg Peterson told you about it.
He did.
And I just shipped one off a month ago to Georgia for an Islanders fan who's the daughter's getting married. And the lady from Omaha that I used to, where I used to get my hair cut, and actually she named her younger son after me when I played in Omaha, and she's the one that asked me to do it. So it was $78 to ship it down there, and I said, I don't want any money for the stick rock. I'll, you know, do it as a favor. And so that was one that I did, and I'm in touch, and these people were thrilled to get it. And I'm still in touch, like on Facebook, with with guys that played with my brothers that I didn't even play with, that I played against maybe. And my older brother, Mike, and I, we go to St. Catharines every year, and I'm friends with Marcel Dion, of course, and they do a golf tournament. It's 30 years now. And we've been guests for over 25 years, and we go down there in August and play in Niagara Falls, and we have 80, 90 guys, and it's just great to, and these are guys that, well, two of them played on our midget championship team, and I played with and against these guys in the minors, and it's a very tightly knit group, and I enjoy doing that. But I've got some great stories for you about my brother Mike, though, as a hockey player. Some pretty funny, the one in particular, when he was playing in the American League, and there was a family that played for the St. Louis Blues, and one of the boys that got sent down to the American League team, and this guy was annoying. He'd fight a lot, and he was a dirty player. I can't remember his name now, but the owner from the team my brother played for came in and said, "I'll give anybody $500 a game and a bottle of Jack Daniels if you take this guy out." The name was Gassoff, played for St. Louis Blues. And you can check out that on I guess, on HockeyDB. So the player said, "Well, Keeler will do it." And my brother Mike, he was like Orland Kurtenbeck. He wasn't a clutch and grab. He was like a Dan Maloney wouldn't even fight him. That's how tough he was. So anyway, Mike agreed to do it. Well, the first game, the guy comes down the ice. Mike goes in the corner and brushes up against him, drops his gloves, and pounds the crap out of this poor guy. So they played 12 games that year. And Mike was only making $400 or $500 a year. And so he ended up fighting this guy 12 times, and the poor guy, like, so the next year Mike gets traded from Buffalo to LA Kings, and he ends up in Springfield. Then he ends up out in Portland, the Western League. Well, this other guy got traded from St. Louis to somebody else. He ends up in the same league playing against my brother again. So they play the game. Mike doesn't go near the guy. So after the game, he comes up and shakes my brother's hand, says, "Mike Keeler, how you doing?" He says, "Have a beer." He says, "I got to ask you something." He said, "Last year," he said, "every time we played you," he said, "I didn't do nothing to you." He said, "You beat the shit out of me 12 times. He said, "What gives?" And Mike says, "Well, you know, the guy, the owner, said he didn't like you, and he promised me $500 and a bottle of Jack Daniels." He says, "For Christ's sake, if you told me, I'd give you $600 to leave me alone." And that's a true story. So that was Mike. Like Mike could, I never saw him lose too many fights. He was a Tim Horton style player, block shots, you know, and it's funny because his first fight at Junior A, I remember it like it was yesterday. And he gave the guy a pretty good, like the other guy threw a couple punches, but he gave it to this guy pretty good. And I kind of laughed because when I met his daughter here in Kitchener and she told him about the Keelers, he said, "Oh, those guys," it was Cam Crosby. And Cam had just been built up as a weightlifter with track and field, shot put, javelin, all this, and coming out of Toronto. And I was playing against Gary at the time in Toronto. And Mike gave it to him pretty good as a 16-year-old, and Gary was a couple years older, so he could hold his own. So I laughed when I saw Kate, and God bless his soul, because apparently Gary just passed away, or Cam just passed away in December, and I wasn't aware of that till recently. But yeah, she told him about the Keeler boys, and he says, "Oh, those guys."
The irony, and it's probably not a good one for the league, but the Sudbury Wolves are being investigated right now by the OHL for allegedly putting a bounty on a player for the Barry Colts. And hearing you tell these stories about the bounties that were out there, it's nothing new in the game, is it?
No, and you know, Brad Park, he got fired as a Detroit coach for doing that, sending the guy out. Like, he admitted to it, which was a mistake. But, you know, I think that my dad had the right attitude. And dad used to say, like, he raced stock cars as well. And him and my uncle actually raced against Richard Petty back in the day in the 50s where the Argos played at the exhibition. And anyway, dad would say, if a guy spits in your face, kicks your feet out, butt ends you, spears you, he said, "Boy, you have to drop your gloves." He said, "I don't want to see you in a stick fight." He says, "You have to defend yourself and your teammates." And we drew the line, tripping, you know. But in the rule book, which I don't get, for 100 years, intent to injure is intent to injure. It's a 5 minute, it's a 10, it's an automatic game. And this is why when people talk about not just Riley, but the guy in Detroit that got six games and another player, that when you intend to injure a guy, and even if you swing your stick and you miss him, you need to pay the piper. And I think that the league has made these special rules, like for head hitting and all this kind of stuff. If they had just used the rules that were in place before, they wouldn't have had to. But I think, you know, they're taking the game out of the referee's hands and, you know, making it easier for everybody, I guess.
You mentioned those coat racks you make with hockey sticks. Where can we find them? I've seen some pictures of them. They look great. Where can I point people to look at them, find them?
Well, I've got, I'm actually hockeystickrack@gmail.com is my, you know, thing. And I am on Facebook and that, but well, I've got, I should like show you a couple that I got here. And this is the first one that I made. I don't know if you can hang on just a second, this stuff out of the way. This is one of the first ones that I made.
That's and great. The puck Ottawa, to keep the sticks apart. Yep.
Niagara Falls and Omaha Knights. And then, of course, I got my New York Ranger hat signed by some NHL guys, you know. But I do this as a hobby. And Marcel Dion got me doing it about 20 years ago. And I did Bobby Hull's 82 when he went into the Hall of Fame. I did racks for Marcel that he sold out of the store in Niagara Falls. Of course, the pandemic shut that down for a while, so I think he deals out of the warehouse now. And I started doing it for Marcel, and I've just been doing it as a hobby. Like, I don't make a lot of money at it because it takes me a couple hours to make them, and I've shipped some to the States, which I can't make any money doing that. I made one for John Cooper, the coach of Tampa. I made one for Andrew Chuck. I've made one for Pierre LaRouche that played in Pittsburgh. I did one for Steve Vickers, and when I do them for the NHL, Marcel, I do all the teams that they played for, but it's just a hobby, but I enjoy it, you know. And of course I told Greg, I said, I'll make sure if I make one for you, that it wouldn't have Montreal Canadiens on it.
That's right, Doug. Don't even mention that team around me. Although I still appreciate Arbor Jack High for sure.
Oh yeah. And you know, like back in the day when I don't know, that's my 67th puck from the day. And it's got on here, December 23rd, 69, the Russians versus Ottawa. And I played in that exhibition game as an 18-year-old and scored a goal, which was the Red Army team that played Team Canada, except for a couple of players. And for me to get a goal in that game, Dan Maloney played with us. He got a goal. And I'm standing at the blue line. This is just before Christmas. And I got Marcel Dion on my right, and I got Daryl Sittler on my left. And I was with the 67s, and we played the Red Army team. And at that time we played a couple exhibition games against NHL teams. That Red Army team was as solid as a rock, and I never seen a better conditioned hockey team in my life. And I knew in 72, they were going to have problems. I didn't think they'd be that severe, but I knew they were in for a battle because they beat us 8-3, and they played 13 games and they won 12. And the only team that beat them was the Junior Canadians because they're the only ones that could skate with them. And this Red Army team was something else to see. And for me to play against them, I mean, I threw a body check. I got a guy with his head down. And he went up and over my back. And I thought his skates were going to touch the clock because I used to like to throw the odd body check, you know, when I didn't have the puck. And they had a picture in Ottawa. I wish I could have got it. It was in the rink for years and I couldn't find it. This guy went up and down. And I crawled off the ice like it took the wind out of me. This guy was 225, 5'11". And at that time, their two best players were Sturshinov and Firzov. And they were like Bobby Hull and Gordie Howe. But they had Yakishev, they had Mihailov, they had Raguilin on defense. And Tretiak wasn't playing then. It was Konovalenko. And so I got the goal. Murray Wilson and I used to have a play where he was my left winger, and I shot the puck at the goalie's pads, and Murray would knock the rebound in. We would score 3 goals a year like that during the OHA season. And I shot it, and the goalie stuck a skate out and went through his legs, and I thought we were down 2-0, and it made it 2-1. And it was probably one of the biggest thrills I ever had, like playing hockey. And like I say, then they lost the Junior Canadians 9-2. And that was like they were tired out, but that Red Army team was something else. It was like, I couldn't believe it.
Where'd you play those games? In Ottawa?
In Ottawa, yeah. We played that. They played in London. They played in Ottawa. They couldn't play at the Gardens because of Harold Ballard. so one day you and I can sit down and talk about the Leafs and the Marlies over the years. I could tell you a lot of stories about them over the years. But I've even got something here that would make you laugh. A good friend of mine, Bobby, I'm trying to think of his last name, was the head scout for Boston for 30 years. And he got me these scouting reports from the St. Louis Blues when I was in Ottawa. That was a scouting report in Maple Leaf Gardens. And it was about me and about Murray Wilson. And it was about John Potvin, Doug Acomb, Gord Davies, actually Mike Murphy that played in the NHL, Freddie Barrett. And down here, the scouts are at the rink. Now, this was from, you remember Jimmy Devolano of Detroit?
Absolutely.
So he was made this report. And down the bottom, the other scouts, Scotty Bowman, Steve Berklicich that scouted me, Alex Davidson. And on this one, Les Moore, Greg Curry, Steve Berklicich, Bob Davidson, and Jim Gregory. And Gregory actually signed up for me. And
that's
that
incredible.
Was 1969 and 1968. So it says here, Ottawa's Doug Keeler played well, but is a little small, but still has 2 years. So let's hope he grows. And the other one here says something about Marlies Doug Acomb got 4 goals. And then they down the bottom said, for Ottawa, John Potvin, Murray Wilson, and Doug Keeler came to play. It says Pierre Jerry was lackluster. So, you know, could you imagine them doing a scouting report like that in this day and age? You'd have a book or the computer, right?
Absolutely.
So it's kind of a nice keepsake to have this stuff, though, you know?
It really is. And we're going to have to do a second episode, Doug, just on the Leafs and the Marlies.
Yeah. Yeah. And you might not like some of the stuff I say, but, you know, I just tell the truth. And like I said, I got a lot of friends that play with the Leafs. And when we played against Tulsa, that was their farm team. And, of course, the one game I couldn't play center because Steve Vickers had broke his jaw. So they put me at right wing with Bill Hogebaum and Normie Gratton that played with Buffalo and Montreal. And who do I face off against? The starting favorite, Brian Spencer.
Oh my gosh.
And I never played. And I hear all these stories. So wouldn't you know it, from the faceoff, the puck squirts to the boards. Well, I go over to get it, and I can hear this moaning, groaning, and panting like this guy's going to kill me. And I step back 2 feet. He took the door right off its hinges. True story. I mean, and I'm like, are you for real? So I wasn't going to fight him. Him and Drabano fought, but.
Wise choice, Doug. Wise choice.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.